Where are you boys headed?
Canada. We're going over the border to Canada for some french fries and gravy, sir.
Poutine.
Canada, huh? Almost made it.
You're listening to The Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM.
You smell something, Rabbit?
Fear.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Good evening.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus-produced radio show that strictly talks hockey. Glad to have you with us tonight, everybody, as we have a jam-packed show. Lots of news to go over as we get everything set for the rest of the week, the rest of the month. Actually, there'll be a big announcement at the end about our guest next week. So let's bring in our illustrious co-host, Jenna. Jenna, how are you?
I am doing well. Just, you know, same old, as per usual.
Same old, same old. Nothing ever changes too much, eh? That's all right. No. lots to talk about tonight, though. I don't know really where we're going to... I think we'll start local and sort of work our way outward because there's about 101 different stories that we've missed over the last month after interviewing... I mean, I don't know how many women we interviewed over the last 30 days in March and maybe beginning of April or end of February there, but... I'm pretty proud of the guests we've had on, and we'll even mention one of them that was on a few months ago, actually, today.
Yes, I know. It's been so much fun it's always fun, but just getting to talk to different people and, you know, learn some new things about these ladies is the best.
I can't disagree. For everybody who's listening, happy April Fool's Day as well. That's today. Also happy first day of baseball for everybody who's a baseball fan, because that apparently is happening today as well. I do know it was snowing during one of the games today, so always good to bring in a little winter and a little hockey weather for that side of the coin. But let's get into this. Let's have some fun. Let's start with the local team then, because I don't know what's going on with the Jets, but these slow starts are starting to get a little more repetitive and it's starting to look a little ridiculous out there. I can't understand how the Jets can't be excited to play the top team in the division when they roll into town and they have a chance to take a share, at least a share of first place, if not first place outright. Yet the Jets didn't seem to show up until about 5 minutes left in the game yesterday.
Yeah, I watched a little bit, but just replay wise I was moving some stuff all day for my friends, so I didn't get a chance to watch, but I've seen some, not I wouldn't say highlights, but just some after the fact, and yeah, it didn't seem like the best game to be watching, that's for sure.
And yet it's hard to really look at this team and go, like, I don't know. The potential is there. We saw them dominate Calgary in that last game they played against the Flames. Like, dominate. Mm-hmm. Like, start to finish, it was a completely polar opposite of what we saw yesterday against the Maple Leafs. And yet, I don't understand how this team can go from being such a high to such a low without any sort of, like, reason for the turnaround. Like, there are players who are playing well, and there are certainly, you know, a handful of players who certainly can probably, you know, admit they need to step up their game, but to see them go from, you know, just absolutely pinning an opponent to the mat to allowing them to get, you know, punch drunk against the Leafs is shocking to me, because I don't know any other team that's like that right now.
Yeah, no, well, like you said, the potential is obviously there, but if you're not being consistent, like, yeah, you can have a couple players playing well, but as a team, you need to be consistent in order to get really anything done. And the Jets haven't seemed to really been able to find a way to get that consistency going, which I don't know why, because like you said, the potential is there, but it has to be, I don't know, like maybe it's mindset, it's mental, I don't know, but they need to start figuring out a way to become more consistent if they want to, you know, win any games or just even compete with certain teams at this point.
Well, and I mean, that's the thing, right? I mean, if we're going to push for first place in the division and hopefully home ice advantage throughout the first couple of rounds of the playoffs anyway, assuming that you don't falter in the first round, but having home ice advantage would be a good idea, except for the fact that it seems like the Jets just don't understand that having the last change and playing well on home ice goes a long way when it comes to succeeding in the playoffs, because whenever they seem to come off a road trip and come back home, I mean, I know there was an allusion to it yesterday and the guys were talking about it on the broadcast about a, you know, a wine and roast beef kind of game where guys, Glenn Sather made the reference and Craig Simpson explained it, but to me, it's a dumb reference, but whatever. It seems like these guys come off the road and come home and just go, oh, well, we can just do whatever we want now because we can just rely on talent to win. We don't have to work hard. Yet we seem to see it every single game. Every team that outworks every other team, 99.9% of the time, seems to win games. And the Jets just don't seem to have that effort when they come off road trips.
Yeah, it's like there's nothing left in them. Like, I don't know, maybe they're just not in as good a shape as the other teams or something. But yeah, I don't know. You'd think that they would be at this point, but.
Blake Wheeler goes down, injury to Blake Wheeler yesterday as well. I'm assuming, again, I can't say for certain, but I'm assuming that he'll be replaced at some point by Andrew Kopp on that line. If not Andrew Kopp, possibly Mason Appleton. Would you rather see Kopp or Appleton replace Wheeler if he's out for any length of time?
I think I'm going to have to go with Kopp.
Okay.
I think.
Yeah.
I'm just like trying to.
No, that's fair. I mean, that would give you a Stastny Dubois Kopp line.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that line would, I mean, obviously, like we said, there's so much potential everywhere right now with the Jets, but it's just not there. But I don't know. I feel like either one could. Why is that so hard for me to answer?
Well, again, you have options, and that's the thing, right? Like, I mean, you could also, you know, look at moving guys around. You could look at moving somebody else up, but or move somebody down if you have to. But again, that's where it comes in. Having that kind of depth is good, obviously, for the Jets. I mean, there's no take nothing away from having that depth. I mean, that's the whole idea. The Jets wanted to build that depth. But I look at this now and I go, honestly, and don't get me wrong, I'm not here to rain on Blake Wheeler's parade. But if you can get a guy to step up and maybe do the same thing that Blake Wheeler did, whether it be generate offense through passing or maybe score a few goals off that wing, you're not really out anything at that point. You don't really miss Blake Wheeler that much. And I think that's where the question of Kopp or Appleton comes in. It could be somebody else. Maybe it's a Perreault. Maybe it's one of those guys that goes up there. But I mean, to me, it looks like it's going to be one of those either 9 or 22 up there in terms of playing where normally Blake Wheeler is. But I would actually like to see, and again, I'm not going to lie about that, I would like to see Appleton given a shot up there. I think he's earned it for as hard as he's played this year and for the role he's played. I think he's maybe earned it to move up there, and we'll see if he can do a little damage up there. But again, you're not missing anything if you put Andrew Kopp up there. That's the thing.
Yeah, I know. Well, like you said, you know, they obviously have that depth where you have some options, which is great. But at the same time, if they're not being consistent, like even individually, like how do you like, is it really going to make that much difference? Like you said, actually, that was a good point. Appleton probably, maybe not saying Kopp doesn't, you know, deserve a nice shot up there, but I think that, yeah, I don't know. It all goes down to, again, like who's going to show up for those, you know, that who's going to show up really.
Right.
It can be so dependent on the day with anyone on that team at this point, which is kind of the hard, I think that maybe that's why it's hard for me to answer, because it's very dependent on certain days, certain games, or certain periods almost even.
Well, and then the other decision the Jets have to make is obviously going into the trade deadline now, depending on how Blake Wheeler, how bad the injury is. Hopefully it's not long-term by any means, but the Jets have to determine what they're going to do at the trade deadline, because obviously they're not going to be sellers if they're going to be at the top of the standings. They're going to try and add something or somebody. We've gone over this a couple of times, and it's hard to answer because the asks right now for some of the guys, and again, guys are being pulled off the board. Again, with Nashville back in the playoff picture down in the U.S., Matthias Ekholm suddenly doesn't become available anymore. With Phoenix being on the, or with Arizona being on the edge of being on the playoffs, does Goligoski all of a sudden get pulled off the board? Like, it's so tough right now to determine who's going to be in and who's going to be out, because there's so many good races right now. And that's where I think teams have to make a decision. I'm looking at it and I'm going, if I'm the Jets, I got to this point of being near the top of the standings with this group. I'm prepared to go into the playoffs with this group. Do you feel the same way, or do you feel they still need to add a piece?
Yeah. See, I think that they could very easily, you know, just stay how they are, like keep it going. But at the same time, it's not even that it's not working. It's just that they're not working. Like, they're not physically putting in the work that they need to. So I think, you know, we could just keep the same, you know, same as now. But I mean, even then, if you know, maybe trade a couple people here and there, it might give the team a little bit more of a, all right, like, let's do this. Are these new players coming in? They might just have that little push, being like, okay, well, I have to prove myself. I don't know. It's hard to say.
I mean,
we have depth, we have so much potential, but yeah, No one's using it.
Well, and I mean, that's what I look at. I look at it and I go, we have the depth right now, probably, that we could pull a guy up and not cost us any draft picks or any other players, where if we needed to change something up, we have those options. Again, you got guys like Nico and Heinola sitting right now in the press box, watching from the press box. So if the defense isn't working, there's a chance to work a younger guy in there maybe. But again, it's one of those things where you're going to have to, you know, judge what's available, who's available, and how much it's going to cost to get them. So I think that's going to be, as we get closer to the trade deadline, that's going to be the big question, is who is available and at what price. But right now, everything looks like it's kind of still in the air, because there's so many teams that are really on the verge, aside from maybe a Detroit, maybe a Buffalo, maybe an Ottawa. There aren't really a lot of teams that are going to go, you know what, we're completely out of it, we're just going to be sellers this year.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I mean, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, we can have our speculations all we want with what they're going to do, but I feel they always pull something out of the way. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Speaking of Buffalo.
Oh, yes.
February 23rd was the last time they recorded a 2-point game. It was a 4-1 win over New Jersey. They finally snapped the streak last night on March 31st, an 18-game losing streak for the Buffalo Sabres. They defeated Philadelphia 6-1 last night to break out of that in a big way. To give you an idea of just how bad it's been for the Buffalo Sabres, and it's been bad. Like, we're not going to lie about this. It hasn't been pretty. But Buffalo, for example, Buffalo played Philly 4 times, Rangers twice, Islanders 3 times, Pittsburgh 4 times, Washington once, Jersey twice, and Boston twice during that 18-game losing streak. Before you even start laughing, the most goals, not including last night's game against Philadelphia, the most goals they scored against any team was Philadelphia. In 4 games, they scored 7 goals. They had scored 6 against the Islanders in 3 games. They scored 4 against Pittsburgh in 4 games. They scored 5 against New Jersey in 2 games. New Jersey was their closest, sort of their closest competitors, and that was the last team they beat.
Yeah, wow. They're having a tough year this year, I guess.
Yeah. And so the question was posed on network TV last night. Do you continue to play Taylor Hall, or do you hold him out so that he doesn't get injured? And the shakedown basically came down to, you have to keep playing because you have to try and keep winning. You have to try and win at some point.
Yeah, you can't just sit him out and say, sorry, like, whatever. Like, I mean, so, I get that, but...
But if you're looking for a forward now, and you're looking at Hall, and you're going, he might be available, he's probably going to be available if Buffalo wants to do anything. But I'm not... there's no way I'm paying a ransom for him, because, honestly, he's been terrible during this whole 18-game streak. He's barely scored any points. I mean, granted, neither is the team.
Yeah.
But... you expect a guy that's earning, what is he making, $9 million a season? And again, don't get me wrong, they have Hall earning a ridiculous amount of money. They have Jeff Skinner earning a ridiculous amount of money. The difference is that Hall will become an unrestricted free agent at the end of the year. Skinner, you're stuck with for 6 more years at that price.
Yeah, yikes. I mean, it's kind of hard to say, too, because obviously they're both, you know, they have potential as well. But it also could just be, you know, I don't know. Like Hall, yeah, maybe he's not producing, but again, it is a team game when it comes down to it. So maybe switch up the lines, do something, which I'm sure that they've done multiple times at this point. But yeah, I don't know.
The other thing that I'd be worried about if I'm Buffalo is that in that 18 game losing streak, and this is where things are, you know, it's bad because again, they talk about how, you know, how losing sort of is a cancer and it just keeps growing within the locker room and guys get down and other guys get down. And then it just keeps sort of getting worse and worse. Buffalo during their 18 game streak only led going into the third period 4 times.
Oh, wow.
In other words, they lost all 4 of those games, but they got 3 points out of those four games. They lost twice in overtime, once in a shootout. But when you're only leading 4 times going into the third period, there's a problem in that locker room. I don't know whether it's coaching. I don't know whether it's players, but if you're simply there's enough talent on that roster, you should be able to score a few goals and get a lead going into the third period. Buffalo doesn't. They just don't.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, you can. I mean, you're not going to really win many games. I mean, obviously you can win games if you're not, you know, ahead going into the third, but it's, if that's a consistent thing, and I don't know, I just can't imagine being on that team right now. Cause even then maybe it comes down to like, oh, we keep losing and it's frustration, but you'd think that they want to, like, they got to switch some up, especially, yeah, like you said, there's got to be a problem in the locker room. Cause normally, you know, you get in there and that's when you start to get yourselves fired up again to go back out there and be like, look, like, let's do this. I don't know.
Again, you played high enough level hockey. I mean, you guys didn't go through an 18 game losing streak, thankfully, which would be just
first couple years we might have.
Well, I was going to say that'd be a little soul crushing, but at the same time though, I mean, how do you legitimately change that sort of mentality? Because I mean, I look at it and I go, I mean, I just come in and, you know, just go gangbusters. Like I wouldn't even care, you know, what the answer would be, but at the same time, though, you have to play a system. You have to play within a system. You have to play with teammates. You have to play, you know, a defensive scheme at some point to try and, you know, prevent goals from going in. I mean, how do you really change that around if things just simply aren't working?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, normally it comes down to like every team has those leaders and stuff that needs to be able to, you know, communicate saying this is, I know for us, like if we were playing awful or something, we'd come in and be like, hey, like, what the hell are we doing? Basically, like, you practice it every day, you do whatever every day, so it should transfer to games. And if it's not working, then those leaders also need to be like, hey, well, we need to do, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there needs to be that communication that just somehow also manages to fire you up a little bit, being like, look, we got this. But
in Buffalo's case, they don't got
this. I don't think they do, yeah. I don't know. That's what I mean. That's a hard one, because I mean,
yeah,
it's a lot of games to lose in a row.
I mean, legitimately, if you look at their 50 games, that's 1/3 of their season gone. 1/3 of their season gone to losses in that one stretch of basically a month and a week, 5 weeks. So that's horrible. And that's why they're not going to make the playoffs. So,
yeah, that's, I can't even imagine, like, the soul crushing, as you said before, like, that would be devastating.
Yeah, I don't know if I could handle it. I mean, it would be tough. I mean, being a Buffalo fan means that you're used to, I mean, this has been going on for decades, whether it be the Bills, whether it be, you know, the Sabres, whether it be anybody else in that town. I mean, this seems to be sort of a recurring theme for the town of Buffalo, and I just feel bad because at some point somebody, one of those teams has to break the cycle.
You would think.
Like, just the sheer number of years that they've been around, you'd think that one of those years they'd have to be able to break through, but it seems like that's never going to happen for Buffalo.
Yeah, at this point, it doesn't seem very likely, but I mean, keep hoping, I guess. If not, maybe those fans need to find it.
Just cross your fingers and hope for a better team altogether at that point, to maybe move to a city who's got a better team.
I'm out of here.
We're gonna leave Buffalo for a second. Another story that's a little closer to home, and certainly one that I found a little more happy, a little more positive compared to the Sabres. It was reported this week that the MJHL's Neepawa franchise, which formerly known as the Natives, will unveil their new name in coming weeks. They have spoken to team and community members. The team has spoken to team members and community members. They've all agreed that a new name was necessary and will be better for the future and for any future Neepawa MJHL business. They didn't really reveal what it's going to be, so that'll come out, as I said, in a few weeks. But it seems that Neepawa has moved off the term natives, which I think is a good setup and a good move by them. Again, I don't think you're going to complain too much about that, are you, Jenna? No?
No, not at all. It's long overdue at this point. So I'm excited to see what they come out with, because...
Right. I mean, that's the thing that I'm kind of excited about, because, I mean, I've been to Neepawa a bunch of times for work, and I know this, you know, the town fairly well in terms of, you know, just driving through it and places to go, people to see, that kind of thing. There's a lot of good history up there, and I think that they could come up with a really good name if they're going to reflect the area, reflect the town and the city of Neepawa. But I'm excited to see what they come up with. I think there could be something really good there.
Yeah, I think that they're going to have some. I'm just got a feeling it's going to be, like you said, there's a lot of history up there, and there's a lot, like, that town's such a cool little town. So I'm sure they have something pretty neat or interesting coming up. So let's keep our eyes open for that one, because I'm excited.
That'll relate to the next one. I'll save that one for this little piece of news for the next one, because it relates to a bigger story. But we'll spread our wings a little further here now. I want to report that AJ Murley, for those who don't know him, he was the equipment guru for the Alberta Pandas. AJ was the guy who looked after everything. I mean, did phenomenal work for the goaltenders there, in Chamberlain and Owen, Oswald, all the good goaltenders out there in Alberta. He is now leaving that program. He has got a job. He took a job as the coordinator of team services with Hockey Canada. So AJ is going to do some awesome work, I think, for Team Canada, for Hockey Canada. But it leaves a kind of a big hole in the Alberta Pandas, I don't know, equipment sort of side of things, because he was the guy out there. So congratulations to AJ, obviously, but kind of sad that you have to lose somebody for Hockey Canada to gain somebody. I mean, again, it's a huge stepping stone. I'm going to take nothing away from AJ, but super excited for him as well. But just one less face that we'll recognize here in Canada West now.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. Like, that's, like you said, that's a big step. So congratulations to him on that. But yeah, like you said, also, you know, one less recognizable face for us to see around the rinks or whatever. So maybe they'll find someone that we might, you know, I'm sure they'll find someone great, but I mean, he's been there for how long
forever. Like, yeah. He's been there for as long as I know. I've known the Alberta Pandas. AJ's been there. Yeah. So
yeah, that's a big gap in the program there right now, but good for him.
We're going to stay in Edmonton though, because I think you'll be excited about this, Jenna.
Yes.
Former guest of the show and current goaltender for the McEwen Griffins, Natalie Bender. She was honored by Grant McEwen University this past week or couple weeks for having the top GPA in the McEwen School of Business.
Yes, she is like one of the smartest people, but she's very smart, but she puts in the work, and it, obviously, even with hockey and everything, like, she's one of those people that will commit herself 100%. So she definitely deserves that. I saw that and I was so excited, because she really, of all people, deserves that. So that's amazing.
She was also, because we're not done honoring her, she was also named the 2020-2021 Leadership Award winner out at Grant McEwen University.
Yeah, I kind of saw that one coming. I mean, kind of got a sense talking to her, but she's just one of those people that's like a natural born leader. Like, no matter where she is, who she's talking to, like, she's pretty amazing. So congratulations, Bendy. That's awesome.
Huge congrats to Bendy if she's doing the school thing pretty well. Got that nailed down. Got the hockey thing nailed down too, from what I understand. We talked to her a little bit about that. So doing well there as well on the ice, as much as she's doing as well in the classroom there. Some sad news though, out of the western end of the country. Selkirk College, which most people won't recognize, is based in Castlegar, BC. Selkirk College announced that they're going to end their men's hockey program due to budgetary constraints. Now, for those that don't know, Selkirk College played in the BCIHL, the British Columbia Ice Hockey League, basically where Trinity Western used to play before coming over to U Sports. With Trinity Western leaving, they only had four teams remaining in the BCIHL, and there was concerns over, you know, making sure that, you know, teams could still exist, teams still had enough revenue to make sure they exist in that BCIHL. Well, Selkirk College said no, they don't, and they pulled the plug on the men's hockey program there.
Oh, that's, I hate when that happens, especially in those smaller leagues, just because they're already small, there's already not many teams, and then you take one away. Like, how do you function a league off of, you know, just a few teams? So
right. And I mean, that's, I think that's the fear right now for leagues like the ACAC as well, especially on the women's side, where, you know, McEwen's moving up and, you know, Mount Royal already moved up, and there's a handful of teams remaining there, but not as many as there were. And I mean, seeing the BCIHL now kind of lose another team, they have three teams remaining now on the men's side.
Yeah, so like, how do you go to a league?
Right, that's going to be a tough league. Basically, you can have one team host both teams on the weekend and just keep moving around weekend to weekend, I guess. But you really do need somebody else in there. You really do need another team in there to make it a, again, to make it a, make road trips actually count for something.
No, for sure. I know, like, even my first couple of years at McEwen, like, we only had, that was before Olds had come into the league, so there's only four teams then. And even then, like, it's not that you get sick of playing the same teams, but it's just so repetitive all the time. And I mean, four is great because you can still have, you know, your playoffs or whatever, but what do you do with three teams when it comes down to playoffs? You just do one round and, like, that's that? Like, how do you...
one team gets a bye and the other two just play to see who gets to play the top team? Is that how it works? So
I don't know. It's, that's really sad, honestly.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens out in the BCIHL. I mean, hopefully there's an answer out there soon because, yeah, three teams sucks. I mean, three teams are good that they're still around, but it sucks that they don't have more competition. No teams,
but
I mean, that's the alternative right now. It looks like that could be coming. Yeah. Is that maybe there won't be a BCIHL coming in the future? So I don't know. We'll see what happens at that point. We'll see what's going on there. And the other big U Sports news came from out east, as the University of Montreal received a monster. Well, I guess not monster, but received a very big gift from Tampa Bay Lightning GM Julien Brisebois. Now, for those that don't understand what's happening out in Montreal, Montreal never had a men's hockey program ever. They've never had it. And the reason for that is they have a football program. And in order to keep the same number of, you know, men's and women's teams, they never started up a men's hockey team. So the $75,000 gift that Julien Brisebois is giving to the university is actually going to the women's hockey program to help develop coaches and coaching opportunities out in Montreal.
I love everything about this story when I started reading about it. Like, that's just, I mean, obviously they don't have a men's team. Who would knows what would have happened if there was a men's team? Maybe split the money, do whatever. But most of the time, you know, everything that people are doing right now is for men's hockey. So
yeah,
that's awesome too. And that it's for, you know, developing coaches, doing whatever, because I think that's going to be a huge part of women's hockey later down the line. Like, yeah, there's a lot of great female coaches now, but having that extra little bit of cash to, you know, even if they're male coaches, but just in the game of hockey to develop that is awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be huge for getting French coaches sort of, you know, elevated to points where they can maybe spread their wings a little bit more and fan out within the province, even within the country. Certainly we've seen some good French coaches already come through Canada when it comes to the Team Canada hockey programming. I mean, obviously Daniel Sauvageau is going to be one of those names that nobody forgets, but to see a number of other women now maybe get that opportunity, get that chance to really sort of, you know, sit down and develop into you know, high quality coaches is going to be really good. So for those that don't know, Julien Brisebois is a graduate of the University of Montreal. He actually got his law degree there, which is why he made this gift to the University of Montreal. He did get his business degree, though, from Concordia. So I don't know if he split between the two, but he opted to give the University of Montreal the $75,000 gift because he got his law degree there, which led to him getting hired by the Montreal Canadiens. So that's how Julien Brisebois is tied to the University of Montreal now.
Oh, good for him.
Yeah, so congratulations to Tampa Bay GM and Stanley Cup winner Julien Brisebois. I mean, that's a huge feather in the University of Montreal's cap to have that gift given to them and certainly help the coaching out there. And I mean, whatever, I've seen Montreal play at Nationals twice now. I've gone to see them. I saw them play in Montreal, or play in London, excuse me, when they were there. I got to see them play in PEI when we were there. I mean, that program is a force. Like, they are ridiculously good. And they've been in the RSEC final now 10 of 11 years that they've existed. Like, they just don't lose. And they come and they are ready to play every game. So full credit to the University of Montreal. They are they're an outstanding program. So this money will definitely probably go to very good use out in La Belle Province.
Yeah, it was actually, I think it was what they've in the 11 years of the program now, they've been at U Sports National Championships 9 times. And yeah. Like 6 of those times they've won medals. Like
yeah.
That's insane. Like yeah.
Including 2 national championships, 2013, yeah. 2016. They won the national championship. So and you think about it, this program started in 2009.
Yeah.
So if you're a team like, again, and I'm not trying to make comparisons here, but if you're a team like McEwen or a team like Trinity Western, like we're seeing huge returns on that investment in that women's program out there. And that's exactly, I think, what we're hoping to see out in Canada West here with, you know, McEwen and Trinity Western growing. Obviously, you know, Mount Royal's put in the time, put in the effort there. They've got a great program now. So we're looking to sort of replicate some of that success. I think that, you know, Montreal's had, you know, that Mount Royal's had, certainly with those two new teams. And knock on wood, we'll see. Well, I don't really want to see McEwen come in and destroy everybody, because that would be mean the Bisons don't win. I was gonna say, I know you'd enjoy that, but at the same time though, I mean, we do want to see them come in and be extremely competitive, and certainly we're excited for that opportunity coming up in the next year anyway.
I know, I can't wait to start watching some hockey again. Well, obviously NHL's hockey, but you know, women's hockey that's university level, I'm
meaningful, yeah. We'll stay in Quebec, because there's a great story that came out actually as of yesterday. And I only caught the end of it because I didn't even know it was happening until yesterday, because nobody really talked about it prior to. But the names Josiane Cossette and Marie-Mélie Dessereau. I think that's how you pronounce her last name. Josiane Cossette and Marie-Mélie Dessereau. I'm going to say Ducero all the time, and it's not Du, it's Desero. Those names should start to become a little bit more of household names. And you're going to ask why. Following the lead that Kenzie Lalonde made when she called the Halifax game in the QMJHL, Josiane and Marie-Mélie became the first female broadcast duo to call a QMJHL game last night.
Oh my goodness.
Look, I had no idea it was happening until I finally caught the highlights for it. So I'll give you the background. Roy and Naranda hosted Val d'Or last night, and it marked the first time that a female broadcast duo basically called the game. So Josiane and Marie-Mélie, who did some of the analyst work, Josiane called the game in terms of being the play-by-play broadcaster. They did an outstanding job. Again, I've watched enough French CBC to know hockey terms in French, yeah, to listen to them call this game. I can't tell you exactly what they said in terms of word for word. I'm not that fluent, but I knew enough to know exactly what they were talking about. They did an outstanding job. Like they were incredible. And I think that this is really a sign. I don't want to say from the QMJHL, because I think that is wrong in terms of just, you know, highlighting that league. But I think this is really a sign though, that hockey is ready for this. Hockey needs this investment from the female side in terms of the effort, and from the league and player side in terms of welcoming them in order to make this work. It's going to take a little bit of effort, but I can tell you right now, Josiane and Marie-Mélie deserve every ounce of credit they're going to be given and should be given, because they called an outstanding game yesterday.
Yeah, that's awesome. I didn't even know that was happening. Like,
again, I didn't know about it until I was just quickly scanning social media yesterday or whatever, and there was a comment about them, and I was like, oh, that's kind of weird or whatever. I'll just look at that, you know. And then I actually looked into it, and I was like, oh my god, they did such a good job. So I listened to the highlights and everything, and they were fantastic. Now regarding the game, Val d'Or dominated the game. They outshot Roy and Naranda 50-15 in the game. So you might be thinking maybe it got kind of boring. Maybe they kind of, you know, I'm overselling it. Credit to Samuel Richard, who played net for Roy and Naranda. He stopped 46 of 49 shots in the 4-1 loss.
Oh my God.
He was everywhere last night in the crease. but again, I mean, it goes back to, and again, they sold it extremely well. They did a great job in commentating. Josiane and Marie-Mélie deserve all of the credit. That's Josiane Cossette, Marie-Mélie Dessereau, are the two young women who called that game. And it was fantastic listening to them call the game and watch the action on the ice at the same time. So good for them. Congratulations to them.
Yeah, that's huge, especially after, you know, Kenzie did that. What was that, last week, 2 weeks ago?
I think it's a couple. It had to be like a month ago now. I think it was the end of February, wasn't it?
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Okay. So that's crazy. My bad. But I think we're going to start seeing that a lot more too. I mean, obviously it's starting out there, like out east a little bit, but I think as we go here and there's more and more females that are doing that, I think it's going to start opening up the doors for even more females. So that's awesome.
Kenzie had a great comment on social media about that today, about wearing shoes in the arena because of all the glass on that's falling from the ceiling. So
I'll go take a look at that.
Yeah, so congratulations to her. Awesome. and certainly for her being a leader, and then watching, you know, Josiane and Marie Malie come along after her, like, this is exciting to see that growth, and certainly that evolution for the game of hockey. So let's hope that continues. I got some bad news though. Not that I like a lot of bad news stories, but we'll stick in the Canadian Hockey League. Back on March 25th, the Seattle Times reported that the WHL Seattle Thunderbirds released two forwards from their roster, a 17-year-old Alberta kid, I'll say, and an 18-year-old BC kid, following a racist taunting incident prior to the season starting, where Seattle's lone black player, also a 17-year-old, was called a racial slur and had a banana waved in his face.
Yeah, the story makes me there's like smoke coming out of my ears right now. Like, I hate that.
So there might be people going, well, who was it? This show will not name those players because two of three of them are minors. So I'm not going to name names. You can, if you're dead set against finding out, you can definitely go find out somewhere else, but I won't name them. However, both players who committed the taunting incident have been informed that they will not play for Seattle for the rest of the season, or in the near future, or anytime else. Okay. They have been cut, and they have been told they are no longer welcome in the Seattle Thunderbirds locker room.
Wow, I love that. I don't love that it happened, but I
no,
like
me neither.
They're, you know,
the investigation. Well, the investigation that the team did, and this is where it gets really sickening. The investigation that the team did revealed that the 17-year-old Alberta kid had been taunting his teammate since last season.
Yeah,
the sad and part. Nobody reported it. Nobody reported it until a team employee. But that's the thing. Nobody reported the taunting since over the course of an entire season.
That's the thing that I think makes me the most mad about this one, is just that, you know, obviously it was happening. There's no way that, you know, other teammates and stuff didn't hear, but everyone just kind of let it happen. And even the fact that, you know, the boy that was being taunted and, you know, had racial comments thrown at him, like, didn't even feel comfortable enough to be like, hey, like, go tell someone. Like, that's so sad to me, but I'm glad they finally caught it. It's just sad that it had been happening for so long and nobody decided that they needed to like step up and say something. Like,
and I mean, Seattle's GM even said that he was shocked that it went on for as long as it did, and they needed to put an end to it. That this investigation was to make sure that if this did happen, it will never happen again. Yeah. And so they did say that the two players, while they were suspended since the beginning of the season, had been going through training and courses basically to correct this behavior. But once it was found out that this incident did happen, this racial slur and the banana waving in the face did happen, that Seattle had no interest in keeping these two on the roster, which I don't blame them.
No, absolutely. Come out of there.
Seattle does retain their rights, so they can be traded if a team is interested. I doubt any team would be interested after that kind of incident. So their hockey futures are likely over at this point. Like, and I don't mean to say that lightly. Like, I mean, they basically ruined their futures if they had a future in hockey.
Yeah, that's the thing, though. They did it. They did it to themselves, especially at that age. You know right from wrong. You know what I mean? Like, there's no excuses for that, so... I wish I could say I feel bad that they ruined their futures, but don't be stupid. Don't be ignorant. It's not very hard.
Well, certainly don't be racist, but yeah, don't be the other stuff either. Like, that's just crazy. So, okay. I mean, I'm not going to name names. I don't want to name names. And certainly the player that had the racist taunting incident against him has already said that, you know, he would just like to sort of move on and forget about, you know, what happened and focus on the season. But I think it goes to say, and it goes to show, that if you're going to be an idiot, you're going to pay for it eventually.
Exactly.
So let's hope that this is the last time we ever have to speak about the Seattle Thunderbirds in a racist incident. Hopefully the last time we have to speak about hockey in a racist incident, although I doubt that will be the case, unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately. Always those people, but let's hope that, you know, like you said, we don't have to talk about something like this again, because it's just, it makes me so mad. There's no reason
for it. No. I'm going to tie together the last three sort of major topics in Canada West, the ACAC, and the ECHL, which everybody kind of goes, wow, what's this guy talking about? What's this crazy guy talking about? So for those that don't recall, or maybe don't remember, because he's a WHL guy, Jordan Paperny, you may recall that name. Jordan played for the Brandon Wheat Kings. Jordan was a goaltender for the Brandon Wheat Kings, where he put up back-to-back 44 and 31 win seasons and helping Brandon win the WHL title in 2015-2016. So pretty good goalie. I will point out that he has the most wins, if you combine playoff and regular season wins, he has the most wins in WHL history.
Oh my goodness, good for him.
So
pretty good goalie.
Yeah, guy's got a little bit of talent.
Just a little bit.
Paperny never was drafted to the NHL, which I can't figure out. Decided, you know what? I'm not done playing. I'm gonna use my Canada West or my WHL scholarship and go to a Canada West school. Signed on with the Calgary Dinos, played two seasons there. Had pretty good numbers there, no complaints. He won 8 of 14 games in both seasons that he was there. He had a goals against average no higher than 245. He was a good goalie for Calgary. Reliable guy. Things didn't kind of work out there that he wanted, though, at the University of Calgary, and decided he was going to take his talents elsewhere. And in 2019-2020, he went to the ACAC, where he was playing with the Northern Alberta Institute of Technology. Went to Nate.
All right.
Posted a 14-3-0 record, a 182 goals against average, and a .933 save percentage. Again, pretty good goalie.
Yeah, not bad.
Still didn't attract any attention. So what's going on with Jordan Paperny, you're asking? Paperny is now actually on a pro roster. On March 26th, the ECHL's Florida Everblades added the goaltender to their roster after he signed a contract with the team, and he'll serve as a backup role at least for the next couple of days. He'll be going in net definitely one of the next 3 days, Thursday, Friday, or Saturday. It's tonight, tomorrow, or Saturday. As Florida travels to Orlando for a 3-game back-to-back-to-back set against the Solar Bears.
Oh, that's so exciting.
So he'll get a chance to start his first game. Now, here's where things get kind of crazy for Paperny. Florida is currently first place in the Eastern Conference. So he's joining a pretty good team already.
Yeah.
They signed him not just to a few days or a couple days or whatever. He signed for the rest of the season with the Florida Everblades. So he'll go into the playoffs with them as well.
Oh, I love that.
So congratulations to Jordan, because, I mean, for a guy who never gave up, for a guy who played in a number of games that legitimately mattered in the WHL and then played in a number of games that mattered for Canada West and never got noticed and played in a number of games in the ACAC and never got noticed, Jordan Paperny is now going to make a difference, it looks like, for the Florida Everblades.
Yeah, that's huge. And especially, you know, he's there for the rest of the season now. So
yeah,
give him a little bit of a chance to just say, hey, screw you all that didn't sign before. Look at me now.
So I will point out that he was on a professional roster before. The Toronto Marlies actually signed him in 2017 to an amateur tryout. Never played him, though.
Oh, okay.
So he never actually made a roster. He was there as an amateur tryout or whatever, basically as an emergency goaltender with the Toronto Marlies. But I mean, this is a guy that legitimately, and again, if you're listening to this, kids, and you don't get, and you feel like you're not getting your shot, don't give up. I mean, go to school, use your resources like Jordan did, where he took his WHL scholarship and used it to basically go back to school and continue playing hockey. Use whatever resources you have, but don't give up.
Mm-hmm. That's
so huge. Yeah, this is a big one for Jordan. So congratulations to him, and really excited to see that. Staying in Florida in the ECHL, though. This is a different story altogether now. The ECHL Jacksonville Icemen played against the Greenville Swamp Rabbits on the same night that Paperny was signed on March 26th. The Iceman took to the ice wearing Thanos, you might remember from Marvel's Avengers, Thanos themed jerseys, complete with Infinity Stone gloves. Warrior Hockey made their hockey gloves look like the gauntlet that Thanos wore, with the appropriate Infinity Stones in the right spots on their gloves.
Yeah, I honestly, I looked at them there. There's something else to look at, that's for sure.
So here's where things went a little crazy, because they said, you know what? We're going to auction them off. We want to see how, you know, if people are interested in them.
Yeah.
How many bids do you think? So there were 27 pairs of gloves that were put up for auction. How many bids do you think they got?
Oh, God.
Take a shot. Just throw it a number.
Maybe like 100, 200.
Okay. And then what do you think the most expensive pair went for?
Couple hundred bucks.
Okay, so if you're buying hockey gloves, I will tell you right now, there were 786 bids on 27 pairs of gloves.
Yeah, I was a little bit off. Yeah.
None of the gloves sold for less than $750 US.
Holy moly.
Cam Critchlow's gloves sold for $990.
Holy.
The only catch, although I guess this wasn't a catch, because there were no special blocker or catcher made for the goalies. Oh. So if you were hoping to see an Infinity Trapper or an Infinity Blocker, Infinity Stone Blocker, no, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, sorry, goalies.
But they raised a ton of cash on that auction. Like, they made a ton of money. And then they sold all the jerseys as well. Jerseys went for anywhere between $250 and $400, it looked like. But the gloves is where they made a killing. Again, 786 bids on those gloves.
That's insane. Like,
so
crazy.
So people, there are 27 people with Infinity Gauntlets now that they can wear on the hockey ice somewhere in this world, because they sold them all. So, and Warrior said they won't be making them again. So
yeah, I don't. Interesting.
So ECHL story right there for you. That's a little bit of fun and a little bit of craziness, but I thought that would be a nice little follow up to some bad news. Like, another good little sort of story here. I don't know if you've heard of a guy by the name of Todd Scott. Name probably doesn't ring a bell. Well, that's okay if it doesn't.
Nope.
So Todd's a goaltender, and he plays for the Tri-City Storm of the USHL.
Okay. Again,
people are going to go, okay, whatever. Like, no big deal. Like, who cares? But Todd Scott's kind of cool, because Todd Scott is now one of five players in the USHL history books.
Oh.
Todd scored a goal on March 20th.
Really?
With 28 seconds remaining in the game, Scott fired the puck 200 feet down the ice and scored a goal on the Sioux City Stampede.
Oh my God, no way.
Yeah, so Todd Scott is one of five goaltenders now in the USHL history, in USHL's history, to score a goal. Do you know the last goalie? You know who it was?
No.
Some Russian kid named Michael Burden of the Manitoba Moose.
No way.
Mikhail Burden was the last kid to fire it down the ice. So I thought that was kind of cool that Todd Scott now added his name to that. To give you an idea, though, Scott's a pretty good player. He's moved around basically more times in his life than any human being should. He was born in Albertville, Minnesota. He played in Omaha, Nebraska. He played in Sioux City, Iowa. He played in Vancouver, British Columbia. He played with the WHL's Edmonton Oil Kings, where he found himself on a three-year stint. That's the longest he's ever been in one place.
Holy, just bouncing around a little bit.
Yeah, so he did some awesome stuff in terms of, you know, just making some good saves, making some good stuff. The Storm, though, he has been an outstanding player for them this season. 17-8-2, 236 goals against average, and 905 save percentage. And then he's got a brand new stat that appeared after his March 20th. I love that. Like, his March 20th. The celebration that he had for that goal, too, was just in, like, he shot the puck and it was going down. Like, nobody was even near it in terms of, he was already like at the bench when the puck went in. Like, yeah, he was gone. He didn't even bother to see if anybody was going to even stop that. He knew. He fired it, and as soon as he let it go, he knew it was in the net.
Oh my God.
And he was gone to the bench to celebrate. So
I'm going to have to look up a replay of that, because I love watching when and like the celebration was probably amazing.
Oh, like, he went nuts. I mean it's so good to see you know a guy just sort of celebrating, you know, with absolutely unrelenting, you know, happiness over what he's done. But to see, you know, Todd Scott sort of do this and really sort of put a stamp, not to make fun of the Sioux City Stampede, but or Sioux Falls Stampede, excuse me, but put a stamp on hey, like I'm the guy. Like it was so good to see. So
yeah, well, I love that.
Yeah. So Todd Scott needs to get a little bit of a mention because I thought he had I thought it was fantastic that he did something awesome like that.
Yeah.
Jumping way overseas, we'll start, I guess, maybe over in over in Sweden.
All right.
SDHL is done. Remember how we talked about how they had there was the COVID thing a month ago and they weren't sure when they were hoping to get started by April? Well, they got started all right, and it didn't last long.
Oh no.
I'm not sure why. I mean, again, I know why Brennus showed up, but I'm not sure. They lost in three game sweep for Luleå over Brennus.
Wow.
To take the championship.
Yeah.
Two of the games ended in overtime, so it was close in the final two games, but yeah, no, it didn't go well for Brennus at all. So the SDHL is settled. Luleå is now the champions of the Swedish league, and that's that for the SDHL. We can move on to next season now.
All right. Well, I mean,
Lugano won the Swiss league over there.
Yes, my friend was playing against them.
That Lugano team is
Very good.
They're stacked.
Yeah, I know. I was actually on FaceTime with my friend the day of that last game. Well, it was daytime their time. But yeah, she was a little bit nervous about it because they just have a couple players that are just absolutely incredible. So well,
I mean, Michelle Karvinen plays over there for Lugano. Like she's the Finnish sniper. So
yeah, I know.
But yeah, I mean, congratulations to Lugano then for winning the championship over there. KHL announced that they're going to have a 24th team starting next season. I guess not starting, but resuming next season is probably the better way to say it.
Yeah.
Admiral Vladivostok, which voluntarily suspended their operations when COVID started back on April 1st, 2020. They announced that they're going to resume operations on Wednesday for the 21-2022 season in the KHL.
Oh.
So I don't know what changed for them, because I'm pretty sure COVID still exists. But
yeah,
Admiral Vladivostok is coming back to play hockey in the KHL next year. Even though they're like, and again, I don't understand. I know that Russia is a big country, but they're like 8,000 miles away from like they're like basically like us to Halifax distance away from Moscow.
Yeah, that's interesting though. Like that, especially because they left due to COVID reasons, and now they're like, oh, whatever, we're gonna come back. Like, pretty sure COVID's still happening. But
I can tell you why they're coming back. I'm not gonna say I can tell you why. I know why they're coming back.
Why?
Because the KHL started out with no fans in the arena, and now they're playing in front of full fans in the playoffs.
Yes. Okay, that would make sense.
So if you're worried about money, that would be the reason to suspend. And then if you're not worried about money because you can have fans come back to the arena, well, hey, play anyway. Who cares?
That's very true. There you go. Look it back to that business over safety.
Well, I mean, if you're in Russia, I mean, honestly, nobody, like, does anybody even care about COVID anymore over there? It seems like not, which, I mean, maybe that's just me and viewing it from afar, but when you have 16,000 people packed into an arena, does it matter?
Yeah, apparently not.
So I mean, I don't know,
survival of the fittest over there, I think.
I guess, yeah. I mean, if your immune system can handle it, or if you've been, if somehow been vaccinated, then yeah, let's go crazy.
Yeah.
Regarding the KHL, CSKA and SKA, who are the two richest teams in the entire setup, they'll play in the Western Conference final over in the KHL. Akbars and Avangard will play over in the Eastern side. You may recognize Akbars as being one of those teams that always seems to be there. Avangard is sort of the new look Avangard. They're the team that signed Ilya Kovalchuk midway through the season.
Oh, right.
So basically four of the richest teams are going to play in the conference finals, with two of them eventually going to the final. So KHL is basically just, if you got money and you can afford to protect people, afford to protect your team from COVID, you can play in the playoffs.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, I mean, good for them, I guess.
we'll see how it all boils down coming up here. But yeah, they're, that's how everything's sort of shaking down right now. Looking at, we got a couple minutes left here. I do want to mention, as we did last week, St. Adolph, Manitoba is your Craft Hockeyville finalist. One of the four for Craft Hockeyville, where they can get a preseason game and a big donation from Craft to help renovate their arena. They're still up for grabs. Get over to the Craft Hockeyville website, set up at crafthockeyville.ca. Get over there and register and get ready to vote, because on April 9th from 8 a.m. until April 10th at 5 p.m., that's Manitoba time, you will be able to vote and vote often for St. Adolph, Manitoba.
Yes. So I'm just going to be sitting on my laptop voting as much as it'll allow me to.
I will be mashing a button that day all day long. I guarantee it.
Yeah, me too.
For those that are interested, Bob Cage in Ontario, Elsipetog First Nation in New Brunswick, Lumsden, Saskatchewan are the other three finalists. None of them even compared to St. Adolph, so don't even bother looking at those videos or checking them out. But in all seriousness, folks, if you don't live in Ontario, New Brunswick, Saskatchewan, you should be voting for Manitoba regardless, so that we can have a preseason game out in St. Adolph. I think that would be fun. They're a great community, the good community. If you're following along as well, there is a phenomenal social media site, a phenomenal Twitter site that they've got set up for them already, where they've been basically pushing come vote for us the entire time. So you should probably check that out as well. I believe it's under, it's at Adolph_ST for St. Adolph. So it's kind of backwards, but.
All right.
But they've been pushing all that on there. You can check out more information there. They've got all sorts of clips and funny videos and stuff like that or whatever for people that want to see it. But I'm hoping that we get a preseason game in St. Adolph. I'm hoping it'll be, I guess, that night on Hockey Night in Canada.
You would assume, but yeah, definitely make sure you're voting and you are registered, signed up, ready to go that day as soon as voting opens, because that would be huge. Especially, yeah. I mean, that community is amazing. They deserve a little upgrade or a little fixing up over there. So
it'll be fun to see a preseason game held in St. Adolph, though. I think that'll be one of those pack the arena to the rafters kind of ideas if we get an NHL team in there, whether it be the Jets or anybody else, to come and play a preseason game there. But I think it'll be a fun setup in St. Adolph. And I mean, if they do win, let me correct myself, when they do win, we will haul the radio show out to St. Adolph and we'll do the radio show from out there as well, and we'll have some fun with the people in St. Adolph, and we will talk to them about their setup that way. So congratulations, St. Adolph, on being named a finalist again. And everybody, get over to crafthockeyville.ca, register to vote there, and then on April 9th, vote until your fingers fall off.
Yes.
Well, hopefully they don't fall off, but because you need to keep mashing the button. So,
I mean, if they do, they do. It's for a good cause. So.
Right, exactly. That's pretty much show for today, as we're almost out of time here. Anything you want to say, Jenna, before we get out of here?
Nope, I don't think so.
No, we're good. We're good that way. With that, folks, we're going to get out of here for another week. Stay tuned, because the big announcement is that next week, we're going to feature two Olympians on this show.
Oh, I'm so excited.
I won't tell you who. You're going to have to watch the release on social media next week, and certainly check Hockey Blog Canada, because that's where we'll have that information. But two massive Olympians, two very well-known Olympians on the show next week. So stay tuned for that, folks, because it's going to be a good one here on the Hockey Show. I'll leave it with that, though. We'll get out of here for another week. Stay tuned for Free Range Radio. Skippy coming up next here on 101.5 UMFM. It is the Hockey Show. We'll see you next week, everybody. No kiss, fire gun. No kiss, fire gun. You're listening to CJUM FM 101.5 in Winnipeg.
Game on!
Game on!
Although your classes are being held via remote, your friends at the UMSU Service Center are still here to help you. Whether you need to pay your tuition, obtain a new student card, or just need some general University of Manitoba related information, the friendly staff at the UMSU Service Center has the answers you need and will point you in the right direction. We're currently open Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. till 4 p.m., so come visit us in room 101 on the main floor of UMSU University Center, call us at 204-474-8211, or email us at umsu@umsu.ca.